Rav Daniel Gladstein.
Okay. So are you guys?
No, I think he's a Chofetz Chaimer, if I'm not mistaken. But I can't tell you for sure, because I never met him, and I never had the pleasure of knowing him. But he put up some Ar Makomos online, and I was able to get access to it through my friend Yechiel Prince. And he focuses on the Al HaNisim. Al HaNisim emphasizes the Malchus Yavan Harsha. And the impression you get when you read this, on a straightforward, superficial level at least, is that we're talking about the Greeks. When I say the Greeks, the Yavanim, I mean Goyim. We're not referring to Jews, or are we? And there might be a certain level of cover-up over here where the Anshei Knesset HaGdola did not want to explicitly mention where the source and who is the source of all Atzaros were. And so we read the Al HaNisim without any mention of the Jews who, as we'll soon see, were giving us a real hard time. And then, of course, the balance of Al HaNisim is about the fact that as a result of Hashem's Rachamim Rabim, we were able to defeat our enemies. And the emphasis here on Tmeim Biad Tahorim, etc., etc. And Achakach Bo Banech Livreisecha, Finu Esechalecha, Tiaru Es Mikdoshecha. So the concept of Tuma and Tara seems to be quite high profile here in the Al HaNisim, both in terms of Masarta Tmeim Biad Tahorim and in terms of Achakach Bo Banecha V'Tirus Mikdashecha. And in a Choveret, an anthology of essays called Hadarom, there's a synopsis of a lecture, a shiur that was given by Rav Soloveitchik. I can't tell you exactly when it was. It's probably decades and decades ago. And he asks the following question. If the essence or the central Shevach Vodoya here in the Al HaNisim is the Milchama, then what's being said here, V'kavu Shmonis Be'Chanukah Elu, that the Iker Kvius of Chanukah was because of the Nitzachon and Milchama, then why is it that in the case of the Chashmonaim, Chazal established a special holiday? There were many battles way before the Chashmonaim, and many miracles in which Hashem, with His great compassion, strengthened us and allowed us to defeat our enemies. He gives a few examples from Tanakh. Yoshua crosses the Yarden. He defeats the Knanim. He speaks about the Melchomos of Yanai HaMelech. These were great victories, and similar victories spot the entire Jewish history. Palamim Rabos, he writes, Nitzchu Yehudim. On many occasions, with divine assistance and intervention, the Jews who are Ma'atim, who are relatively small in number, defeated their Oivim. And yet, lo asu mehem yemei chag v'simcha. So what's unique about this particular military victory in comparison to others? Chazal established a holiday because of this one and not because of others. Now, if you look at the famous Brisa of My Hanukkah, you get a slightly different impression, and the establishment of the days of Hanukkah as Yomim Tovim Bahal Vodah is not necessarily a result of the Milchama. The Brisa doesn't really mention the Milchama just in passing, but rather it mentions the great ness in the menorah, the fact that the Shmonim were defiled, and they discovered one pach of shemen. By the way, just on the side, the Mefarsh make a big deal about this word badku. Usually when you assume that something could result, some positive outcome could result from a bedika, then it's worth trying. In this case, where the enemy was interested in taking over the Mikdash and defiling it, what were the chances, statistically, realistically, that they would actually find a Pach Shemen that was Tahar? So the Mefarshim darshan a lot about this, that maybe that's part of the miracle, the fact that the Jews didn't give up hope, and they felt that it's still worth a bedika, an effort to find it. But in any event, the thrust of what's going on here in this Brisa is the ness of the Pach Shemen, which was Munach b'chol somer shel kohen gadol lo yahav ben l'hadlik yom echad, etc., etc. Now, Rav Soloveitchik claims that our question is still outstanding, even according to the Brisa, because this was not the first or the last miracle of Shemen. The Gemara tells us that there was a daily miracle in the Shemen, and this applied both to the first Beis HaMikdash and even during the second, that the Ner Ma'aravi, which was the first candle to lit, yet it remained lit even beyond the time that all the other Neros were extinguished. And the Gemara establishes that it was a divine miracle to demonstrate that Shechina Shorah B'Yisrael. But yet in this case, the miracle of the Pach HaShemen is memorialized and immortalized for all of eternity with the Chag of Hanukkah. So in order to answer this question and to demonstrate that despite all the other military victories, this one is unique, the Rav asks the following question. He says, how do you gauge and how do you evaluate the significance of a miracle? Is it just because it's supernatural, because it overrides the laws of nature? It's sensational? No. He says, in order to explain and evaluate a miracle in such a way that it should justify the establishment of a chag, it's got to have what he calls an eternal impact. If the miracle could be defined or categorized as temporary in nature, and it only relates to one point in time, but as time passes, the miracle loses its impact, that is not a miracle of the first degree, the highest degree, that would justify establishing a chag for all eternity. So, for example, in the case of Yoshua conquering the land of Israel, that was one kibush, and that was one great milchama, but then there was a fighter that would defeat Klal Yisrael, for example, the Bavliim, or in the case of Bayesheni, the Romium. And therefore all the Gvura and all the great victory of Yoshua's military campaign, Cholfam and his battle, is completely lost. So that great, wonderful, majestic kibush of the land is completely undermined. It's neutralized. It's now shmaman. It's completely desolate. It lacks in any long-term significance. So too, with regard to the miracle of the Ner HaMa'aravi, immediately following the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, that miracle is gone, forgotten. And therefore he says, Lu hayu raka mitus haniros eile chelek ha'ikri shalachagas hayabotel mikfar. If the truth of these supernatural events, as awesome as they are, would form the essence of a chag, then what meaning would the chag have once these miracles are gone? They now remain somewhere in the recent, in the past history, in the mind of those who remember the history. But an amitus, an absolute truth, in order to establish a holiday, would have to be an accomplishment that has an impact for all of permanence. Ena kavona amitus anisteres. He says, what is the deeper meaning behind this chag? And he gives two introductions in order to present his thesis about why the chag was established. His first introduction is that the Torah recognizes the existence of two worlds. One world he calls the Alma d'Isgalia. That's the world that you can perceive with your eyes, with your senses. It's exposed, it is clear, it is famous, it is obvious. But then there's another world, the Alma d'Iskasia. This is the hidden world, the world that's concealed, the world that requires us to penetrate through the outer surface in order to reveal its meaning, because it's hidden. That's his first introduction. His second introduction is based on a Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara tells us the name of Rabbi Chalbo, and if I get a chance later on, I want to tell you something about Rabbi Chalbo that I think is relevant here. That if a person is actually present, heaven forbid, at the time that a Sefer Torah is ripped, then he has to be korea, he has to rip his garments, not once but twice. Once because of the parchment that was burnt, that was ripped, and the other is because of the osios, the ksav, the script, and the writing on the Sefer Torah. And he quotes a pasuk to prove this. Now, I just want to point out that there is a whole to-do, as you all know, about why Reb Yehuda HaNasi in the Mishnayos omits mention of Hanukkah, although it does appear in Ezekiel and Bava Kamma, but otherwise. And the truth is that although it does appear in Tamei HaMinhagim, we're not so satisfied with the answer, to the effect that I'm sorry, I was distracted. Yechiel, can you hear me? Okay, I'm hoping Yechiel is here.
Yeah.
Oh, you hear me. Okay, good.
So I just put in some earphones.
Oh, okay. So to the Tamei HaMinhagim claims that there's a whole to-do about the fact that the Beis Chashmonaim, who were Kohanim, took over the Malchus. This is very famous. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi came from Zera, David Amel from Shevet Yehuda, L'Yosser Shevet Mi, U'mechokik Mi Yisrael, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda Nasi felt that the Kohanim had usurped the Malchus illegally, and therefore he omitted Hanukkah from the Mishnah. Very difficult to accept this, even though he claims that this came from the Ksam Sofer himself. The Rambam, in any event, did not accept this, because the Rambam felt that part of the miracle was that the Kohanim took over the Malchus. That was not illegal. That was necessary at that time. But be that as it may, getting back to Rav Soloveitchik, he says the following. That according to Chassidus, and he mentions the Chassidus of Chabad, because as you know, he was very heavily exposed as a child, as a young child, where his father was the Rav of Chaslavich, a Chabad town. There's an emphasis on not only the Tzad HaNigla, the what looks and appears on the outside, but to penetrate into the Olam, the Alma Diskasia, below the surface, to reveal something that's hidden. And in the case of Ner Chanukah, that's what we want to do. We want to see if we can reveal some eternal message, some impact of the great victory of Chanukah, the Nes of the Pach HaShemen, for all generations. And he goes on in a very dramatic way to say that if we don't penetrate below the surface and grasp the deeper meaning, the concealed meaning of Chanukah, then we may violate what he calls Ona'a Atzmit, which means that we're misleading, we're fooling ourselves. And we think that we're relying on truth when in fact it's only the external truth, and we're ignoring the deeper truth that's concealed, that's below the surface. And he says the following, that we've been celebrating Chanukah for so many years, for 2,000 years, and yet only a handful of people really appreciate the significance and the meaning of Chanukah. And the reason for this is simple, because every other holiday has a clear historical message. In the case of Pesach, of course, Yetzias Mitzrayim. In the case of Shavuos, is Matan Torah. In the case of Sukkot, Kibbutz Sukkot Hoshavti. Purim, the whole story of Purim. There's a clear-cut source in the Torah itself, in Tanakh, for the story and the history and the significance of that day or that period. However, in the case of Chanukah, we don't have Kisvei HaKodesh. The Gemara actually establishes in Masechta Yuma that Lo Nitno Li Kosev, that the Megillah of Antiochus, of the Chashmonaim, is not part of Kisvei HaKodesh, for whatever reason. And therefore, when it comes to Chanukah, it's very difficult for us to get a good grasp, a penetrating understanding of what Chanukah is all about. We think it's just about a military victory and a miracle in the Pach HaShemen, and that's where it begins, that's where it ends. And that's only a very superficial understanding of their Chanukah, because there were many other miracles, both on the military campaign and on the Ness of the Shemen, and yet we didn't establish a Chag. And the reason for Chag HaChanukah is concealed, because we don't have any source that's really clear in the Torah. We don't have anything in Tanakh. And therefore he says that all we have is this Braisa in Masechta Shabbos. We have the Al HaNisim. And then after that, we just have the history that's recorded in the Sefer HaChashmonaim, which he writes is Chaser Erech. It doesn't have a deeper meaning, because the author of that book, even though he lived through that time period of the miracle, the great miracle Chanukah, and l'chora you would have said that he more than anyone else should have understood and appreciated the greater, deeper meaning of these events and these miraculous supernatural events, yet he only understood them on a very superficial level. He gives a mashal. He says today there are many people who are living through through miracles, and they write history books, but they don't have a deeper grasp of what's going on. So you can live through an era, you can actually be a witness to great events, to spectacular events in Jewish history, and nevertheless, mechusarim tfisa, they're not able to construct the events in a proper perspective and understand their deeper meaning. And he says the following, that on the one hand, the victory of the Chashmonaim is a victory against a military power that is Tzava HaYivanim, the very powerful Greek army. And on this, number two, he says the Pach HaShemen lasted for 8 days. But that's not enough. That's not going to give us the insight that we need to understand the symbolic message below the surface in the Alma Discasia of Hanukkah. We don't find, as we said before, these events or types of events that generate the establishment of a Chag. So what is it now about Hanukkah that contains within it a deeper and eternal message? And I'm looking now on the bottom of page 1, if you happen to be following the text inside. And I want to read with you the next few lines. He says the following. Berega shekom lochem chadash acher. In all the other military victories, we defeated our enemies, but yet our enemies were back. They bounced back. They undermined our kibush, our conquering, and we lost the significance of that miracle. And now we're turning to the other side. He says the following. We have a statement of Rabbi Chalba. And Rabbi Chalba in Moed Katan says, as we saw earlier, that the kriya, that we rip our garments upon witnessing the destruction of a Sefer Torah, is a twofold kriya. One is generated by the loss of the parchment of the gvil, the cloth itself, and the other by the loss of the osios. So Rav Soloveitchik says that although this halacha of Rabbi Chelbo is codified both in the Rambam, in Hilchos Avel, and in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, nevertheless, at the face of it, the Gemara tells us a story in Masechta Avodah Zarah about Rav Chanina ben Tradyo, which seems to undermine and contradict this very sugya of Rabbi Chelbo. When the Romans took Rabbi Chanina ben Tradyan out to die, to be killed as one of the Asaru Gemalchus, they wrapped him in a Sefer Torah. They caught him publicly learning and teaching Torah, so they decided to destroy him with a Sefer Torah. Hikifu b'chavile zmoros, v'itzisu b'hemes ha'or. The Gemara goes on to detail many aspects of the death of Rabbi Chanina ben Trajon. We'll focus on just one of them, which is perhaps the most famous of all. The Talmidim asked their Rebbe, Rabbi Chanina, what do you see? And the deeper meaning is, what message can you convey to us with your tragic, catastrophic loss? Omar lahem, yes, gevilin nisrafim. The parchments are destroyed. But the osios parchos biavir. But the letters themselves are not destroyed. They fly up, as it were, to heaven symbolically. And they're kept in a very secure treasure place. The bottom line is that although the gvilin are destroyed, the osios are not destroyed. Why then does Rabbi Chalbo in Masechta Moed Katan insist that besides, beyond the kriya for the loss of the gvil, of the klaf, we have an additional kriya that's generated, the chiv kriya is generated by the loss of the osios? Why? The osios are not lost. The osios are parchos biavir. Does everybody follow the Lechara, the Stira here between the two Gemaras? In other words, Rav Soloveitchik assumes that although there's a destruction of the klaf, that's the physical entity, but the osios represent something more spiritual, you know, the meaning, the message, the substance, the content of the Torah, that can never be destroyed. That will reappear over and over throughout Netzach Netzachim in Jewish history. Why then does Rabbi Chalbo insist that we have a separate kriya because of the destruction of the ksav, of the osios? And again, you may offer many different answers to this question, but in a very unique way, Rav Soloveitchik has his answer, which is going to be the segue to understand what Hanukkah is all about. He says the following. When we talk about the burning of a Sefer Torah, we assume that it's the non-Jewish anti-Semitic enemies of ours that burnt the Sefer Torah. And that's a tragedy of major proportions. And that's the tragedy of Rav Chanina ben Tranya. However, there's a worse tragedy, a worse catastrophe. And that is when the Jews burn the Sefer Torah. He says, in the case of Yoyakim, Melch Yehuda, then the Sefer Torah was burnt by the Jews who rejected the Torah. In such a case, says Rav Soloveitchik, not only is the gvil, the parchment of the Sefer, burnt to a crisp, but the Jew has a capability of destroying even the ksav. And this is what happens during the period of Bayis Sheni. Unfortunately, throughout Jewish history, there have been renegade Jews who have rejected the Torah, but they've been small, relatively small pockets, dissenting minorities. But there's an entirely different catastrophe that comes about during the Bayis Sheni period. The Jews who were loyal to the Torah found themselves facing two different groups of adversaries. And those were the Yevonim, later on the Romans. Each one respectively had its own approach to Milchama. The Romans had to destroy everything, anything that was in their way they would destroy. The Mikdash itself was destroyed completely, totally to a crisp. The Yevonim had a different Shita. Their Shita was, this is 200 years before the Romayim, a very strange Shita. They didn't destroy everything, but rather they wanted to just be machalel, to desecrate, not laharos uliave, but lechalel ulitame. Their interest was to attack concepts like kedusha and tara, to have a different ideology, a different philosophy that was antithetical to kedusha and tara. Not so much physical destruction. It's not the claws of Rome. It's the intellect of the Yevonim, who in their anti-Semitic campaign find anything that has to do with sanctity, with some meaning beyond physicality, antithetical to their belief. And that's bad enough that the Yevonim propagated such ideology that was antithetical and undermined Judaism. But the problem is that the Jews, under the influence of the Yevonim, joined ranks with the Yevonim. In the case of the Romans, the Jews were united. They understood that there's an enemy. But in the case of the Yevonim, the domination, the rule, the sovereignty of the Yevonim was of a totally different nature. The situation was totally different than that of the Romans, in which, and I'm going to read this to you, Harbe Hemiru es Dosam, they rejected Judaism, the Kiblu Bimkoma, instead they accepted the Manhige Kovsheim, the leaders of their conquerors. Many of these Jews who left the fold were Chachamim, Some of them were Talmidim of Tanoim. The Brisa says about Yossi ben Yoezer that his nephew was the one who gave the Yevonim the Eitzah about defiling the Beis HaMikdash. These were the Misyavnim. So when the Chashmonaim, loyal to the Jew, to the Jewish Torah and the Jewish ideology and sanctity, came forward to fight the battle, it wasn't just against the Goyim. It was against the Jews, the Misyavnim. And we know that throughout Jewish history, the apostate Jews are sometimes 1,000 times worse than the Goyim. And these Misyavnim were not interested in completely destroying anything that's physical and Jewish. Laharos, Lahashmid. They're interested in Chilul, Kedusha, and they're interested in propagating Tumah. When Chazal came to organize and formulate the Al-Nisim, they used what's called a Lashon Sagi Nahar. You don't want to refer to a blind person as blind, so you say he has lots of light coming into his head. That's a euphemism. Chazal did not want to speak against Jews, no matter how bad they were, and these were apostates. So instead they wrote, Kisha Omdo Malchus Yavon. But it's not just Malchus Yavon, it's the aftermath, or the footsteps of Malchus Yavon, the impact of Malchus Yavon. The Malchus Yavon that really tried to undermine and be Machal was the Yehudim HaMisyavnim Shebatu Bidosam. They wanted to kick and completely submerge and get rid of Judaism. And this is, according to Rav Soloveitchik, again, I don't know if the historians will bear out this sentence, Hapam HaRishona V'Achrona, this is the first and last time that most of the Jewish people would join the ranks of the enemies to fight against Judaism, because Hamiru Es Dosam. Again, some might argue that we, you know, since the Haskola and the Zionist movement and so forth and so on, we've faced similar situations, but Rav Soloveitchik is not willing to admit that at this point. But rather, Rov HaYehudim Hamiru Es Dosam. What are we left with then? Kvutzot ktanot, kitot achadot, small pockets and groups of people who are loyal to Judaism. Throughout history, we had small pockets of Jews who rejected Judaism, but now the opposite is the case. At the time of the Yevonim, the Misyavnim, we have an entire kehila shlema, a whole community, most of the Jewish ranks, who became Misyavnim. And therefore the job, the responsibility of the Chashmonaim is to re-establish Emuna. And this has an eternal message to it. This is not just a one-time victory. This is to take Emuna, faith in Torah, that has now been burnt, so to speak, and there are only embers left, and to fan the flames and create or recreate Emuna from the omek of tuma, from the depths of defilement, and bring it up to the highest level of tara, so that this would never happen again in Jewish history. Lachain rov ha'halachos miyudches gzeros. If you learn the sugi at the end of the first parak of Shabbos, there were 18 gzeros, all of which were promulgated and ordained by Chazal in order to protect the Jewish Torah. They were all established around this time of the victory of the Chashmonaim. And therefore the meaning of Hanukkah is Aliyah Mituma. It's the Achkav Bo Banecha Lidvir Beisecha V'tiru Es Mikdashecha. Who are these Banim here? Bo Banecha. These are the miut, the small group of Chashmonaim who are loyal and dedicated. These are the zealots who would fight against the Misyavnim, because the Misyavnim were completely shkuim, they were dedicated to Tumah. And now we have to be mala, aliyah mitumah. We take that out of Tumah. From Tumah we go into a state of Tara. And this is going to have a permanent impact on the history of Klal Yisrael. Chanukah represents a turning point. in Jewish history. And therefore you'll find, he doesn't tell you where, but elsewhere you'll find the phrase Aliyah Mituma, which expresses this thought that there was a tshuva movement in which masses of Jewish people returned to the state of Tara Mituma. And that requires a return. A shiva means a return to the highest level of Madrega Rishona, the original level. And imagine the kind of effort and energy that had to be put, the shtadlus that was put in to reach this maila. And this is the Alma Diskasya of Chanukah. Adkan Hakofa Al. If there are any questions, I'll stop here. Again,
the fact is that the Kashmonoim themselves were late, you know, were Mesiavim later. They were, you know, that's part of the problem, and why you know, at least one perspective on why there's this ambiguous relationship. So, you know, you would think it didn't really, you know, stand the test of time that way.
Hmm. Actually, one of the sources that we want to look at, I'm not sure if we'll get to it today because I see what time it is a machlokas in the Gemara Brachas on Daf Chav Tes, which happens to be on your page 3 if you have it, about Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Yochanan Kohen Gadol served as the Kohen Gadol for 80 years. And at the end of his career, 80 years into his career, he became a tzduki. And there's a machlokas between Abaye and Rava as to who this Yochanan Kohen Gadol exactly, what's his identity. And according to one opinion, this Yochanan who became a tzduki was none other than the father of Matisyo Kohen Gadol. Now, I'm not sure exactly at what point in his life he became a tzduki, but you're right. The Chashmonaim themselves became a disaster over the course of the balance of Bayis Sheni, and eventually Herod destroyed the entire base Chashmonaim. They were all murdered. The Ramban claims that that was a punishment because they had usurped the Malchus, whatever. But be that as it may, you're right, Bobby. In a sense, as far as the Chashmonaim themselves are concerned, this is not a permanent change. But at least
it was not entirely their doing. Hashem made the noise.
Okay, but again, the thesis
many times in the future too.
The thesis still stands. Again, I'm not sure if it's if everyone would agree with this thesis that this was a point in which Jewish history and the Jewish nation as a religious entity was saved. And if it hadn't happened, if not for this miracle of Chanukah, we would have been lost completely. Okay, I want to spend the remaining of that time understanding exactly what the Chashmonaim were able to accomplish, as we said in the Alanisim, Ubo Banecha Ledvir Beisecha V'tiru Es Mikdashecha. What does that mean, V'tiru Es Mikdashecha? And this touches on the famous question about the name Chanukah. If you take a look at number 11 on the top left of your page, page 2, the Ran is famous for saying, which every child knows, nobody, they don't know it's from the Ran, but the Ran says that Chanukah is really a split of, it's a combination of two words, Chanu b'chafheh, which means that they established the day of the 25th of Kislev as a day of Yontif. And the Marsha is very upset with this Ran, and he says, Adarabba, Chanukah is not a Yontif. It's not a day of Chanaya. Chanaya means the absence of the ascension from work. In any event, the Marsha offers his own answer. He suggests that the name Chanukah is related to Chanukas HaMizbeach. And he goes on to say that the Chanukas HaMizbeach took place and was initiated by the Chashmonaim. And he quotes a Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah, which you'll see page number 9. And the Gemara there discusses the question as to whether or not a person can come and be Mechalel, can be Mechalel the Migdash, and remove its Kedusha. Because usually we have a principle called Ein Adam Osir Davar Sheni Shelo. So the Gemara says, Lema Vesayele, maybe we could prove from a brisa that there is a way of being Mechal Hegdesh even if you're not the owner of the Hegdesh. And the brisa tells the story about the Mizbeach. It says Shiktsu Anshe Yovan. Again, this might be Loshen Sagi Nor, but anyway, let's say the Yevonim came and they were Meshakets. They used the Avnei HaMizbeach for Avodah Zarah. And as a result, the Chashmonaim had to hide Gonzu as Avnei HaMizbeach. In other words, they couldn't find a way of being Metayer the Avnei HaMizbeach. Therefore, they had to build a new Mizbeach. Omar Rav Sheshes, what does the Braisa mean? Shiktsu le avodas kochav. So the Yevonim used the Avnei HaMizbeach for idol worship. So Gemara says that's not really a proof. Why? Because the pasuk in Yechezkel, which you see on the bottom right, that says bo ba pritzim v'chiluluha, and the Gemara interprets that bo ba means that the Yevonim took over the Mikdash and basically stole the Mikdash, and they took it for themselves. And therefore they could be Mechalel, in this case, the Mizbeach. But it doesn't mean as a general rule that anyone could take the Mizbeach and be Mechalel. Says the Marsha, it's clear from the Gemara that the Achashmonoim had to establish a new Mizbeach to replace the old Mizbeach, because the Beis HaMikdash had a Mizbeach for 200 years after the Chashmonaim, and the original Avnei Mizbeach were put into Gniza because the Chashmonaim were not successful in being Metayaret. So that's the language of the Marshoya, the third line. He says, Hutzrichu Livnos Mizbeach Chadash. So he says that the word Chanukah reflects the Chanukas HaMizbeach, the dedication of the new Mizbeach. And he says, even according to the Medrash Rabbah, that says that the Mizbeach was only up and running in the month of Nisan, but nevertheless, the Gemar Melechas HaMishkan was on Chafei Kislev. He's going back to the Mishkan. And the reason why they delayed the actual use of the Mishkan and the Mizbeach all the way till Rosh Chodesh Nisan, says the Medrash, is because Nisan is the month Shenoldua Avos. But nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the 25th of Nisan the Yichus of being the day in which they would complete the process. Why? Because Shilim Lo B'Yemei Matisyo, that the chinuch of the Mizbeach took place on the 25th of Kislev, and therefore that day is a special day. And already at the time of the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu foreseeing the great action of the Chashmonaim of Matisyahu Bonav, he designated the day of the 25th of Kislev for the completion of the Mishkan. Now this idea, I mean, keep in mind that Marshal lived about 5 centuries ago, but this idea that the name Chanukah is on Chanukah and Mizbeach was not originated by the Marshal. Little did he know, because he didn't have access to the Or HaRuah, one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, who writes about 5 centuries earlier that Lefichach Nikra Chanukah al Shem Chanukah and Mizbeach, because they broke apart the Mizbeach, they hid the Avonim, and then they rebuilt the Mizbeach from Avonim to Horos. And that really is reflected in the fact that there's a smichus parshios between Chanukas HaMishkan at the end of Parshas Noso and Parshas Baal Loscha. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to be Menachem, the Shevet HaKohanim, for their absence at the Chanukas HaMishkan, and gave them Chanukah. And the Ozarua says that this Chanukah is not just a reference to the holiday of Chanukah, but to the entire process of using the Mizbeach. The Kohanim are related to the use of the Mizbeach, and the holiday of Chanukah commemorates the Chanukas HaMizbeach. Now, by the way, I know you don't have too much time left, and I saw on the internet there's a whole machlokas, when is the latest time today you're allowed to eat sufganiyot? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this is mind-boggling, actually gives an explanation. Have you ever heard this? Why we eat sufganiyot on Chanukah? So that's number 13, the Halicha Shlomo. He says that on Chanukah, the Beis Chashmonoim were metayer the Migdash. They were not successful in being metayer the Avdei HaMizbeach, Sheshiktzum HaYivonim, V'lo Yodu L'Tarom, V'Gonzum, V'Tztaru Al-Kach. They were very upset about the fact that the Mizbeach was gone. So the Minhag took it upon itself to eat foods that require a bracha me'ein shalosh. Not the classical explanation that you fry the sufganim in oil, but rather the ikar here is the bracha achrona, which is bracha me'ein shalosh. Now, how is bracha me'ein shalosh unique? And how is it related to Chanukah? And this is paradoxical, because we don't mention a word about Chanukah in Bracha Me'ein Shalosh. He says, because we add two words in the Bracha Me'ein Shalosh that don't appear in Birkas HaMazon. And that is V'al Mizbechecha. So again, if your donuts... if your donuts are gluten-free, then I'm sorry to disappoint you. You weren't Makai in the mitzvah of Achila Sufkinim, because we make a bar in the fush. Taste a dick of donuts would not cut the mustard.
David Nayak is pointing out you could have a good Hungarian kokosh also.
Anything that has a bracha achrona mein sheva, and they took upon themselves to eat these donuts, it could be kokosh, whatever you like. Okay. David, you're also Hungarian? I didn't know that. Okay.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. No. Anyway.
He just likes to make fun of Hungarian.
There you go.
Right.
I have one Romanian grandmother, but it's come out of Hungary, not quite.
Oh. In any event, so the Halicha Shlomo quotes a Gemara in Sota. And the Gemara in Sota says that our eating of peros is not the real McCoy eating of peros. He's talking about Perush and Ishtabku ben Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because after the destruction of the Mizbeach, the Gemara says in Sota, Nital Tam HaPeros. You no longer have the taste of the fruit. It's not a clear cut, close resemblance of fruit. You don't even smell the fruit the way they smell. So he has here a Sefer Avnei Shoah. I'm not sure who wrote this Sefer, who points out that although in Birchas HaMazon we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have Rachmanus on Yerushalayim and on Zion, but we don't mention a word about the Mizbeach. That's only mentioned in the Bracha Me'ein Shalosh. Not only that, we add another phrase in the Bracha Me'ein Shalosh that doesn't appear in Birkas HaMazon, the Verecha Aleh B'Kedusha Uvitara. That doesn't appear in Birkas HaMazon. And he quotes the Gemara in Sota that we mentioned earlier. It says, the very cryptic Gemara on Daf Mem Tes, it says, Tahara Bitla Tam Vereach. So Rashi helps us out here. Tahara Sheposka Mi Yisrael, meaning after the Churban Abayis, and that period of time there was no longer Tara in Yisrael, is Bitla Tama Peres Verecham. In other words, now that they're no longer Tahorim, they can't taste the real taste of the Peros. In other words, only when they were Tahorim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mitayer the Peros, Mireach Ra, Mitam Ra. And the Gemara goes on to tell a story about Rav Huna with Termisa, and he found Rabbah, his son, Omer Lo, do you smell the smell of it? He says, Bini Tara Yeshbach, I can tell you that you're Tar, because the smell of this Termisa is a beautiful smell. But anyway, after Tara was completely Batel, then we lost the good smell and the good taste of Peros. And he says that the tam of Reach and the tam and Reach of Peros is Ganuz, is somehow inherent in the Koch of Tara of Yisrael, in the Bracha Mein Shalosh, which is a bracha that was established for the Peros of Eretz Yisrael, right? The Peros and Ishtapka Eretz Yisrael. We need to mention the Mizbeach. And we say Val Mizbechecha, because when the Mizbeach will be reinstated, then we'll really have the Tam of the Peros. And therefore we add the phrase Unevarechecha Leah Bikdusha Betara, meaning that after HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his great compassion will return to Tzion and Yerushalayim, then Lechol Mipirya V'lisba Mituva, because Nevarecha Leah Bikdusha Betara. Once we have the Tara restored, then it would be the Achilas HaPeros with the Tam and with the Reach. And he says, if you look carefully at the Lashon of the Mishnah Sota, it says, Miyom Shecharav Beis HaMikdash Nital Tam HaPeros. So it seems like we're talking about the Churban HaBayis, but he suggests here that no, what we're really talking about is the Churban of the Mizbeach. Why? What's the connection between the Mizbeach and the Tam of the Peros? And the answer is the mitzvah Bikurim, because with the seven species of Perish and Shtapkim and Eretz Yisroel, Mekayim, the mitzvah of Bikurim, which means we take the Bikurim, we place it on the Mizbeach. And that fulfillment of Bikurim is what gives the Tam in our Peros. I don't mean the Peros that are on the Mizbeach, those are eaten by the Kohanim, but I mean the Peros throughout the land of Israel. So the reason for the takana in the Bracha Mein Shalosh for the building of the Mizbeach is not mentioned in the Birkas HaMazon, is because the Chova of Bracha Achrona, which is a Bracha that we recite on Peros, a Bracha Achrona is recited not just for the Achila, but for what happens after the Achila, right? It says V'savata. And in the case of Peros, we're not talking about Sviya, we're talking about the Tam of the Peh, Achar Gmar HaChila. So in theory, when you eat a fruit, one of the fruits in Ishtapka in Eretz Yisrael, that good taste of the fruit remains in your mouth way longer than you ate the fruit. But that's only if the original Tam, the true genuine Tam of the fruit is there, and that's only at the time that the mitzvah Bikurim was no egg, which means that we had a Mizbeach, and therefore we have a special tefillah on the Mizbeach, that we should be zochet to see the restoration of the Mizbeach, and then, with the mitzvah Bikurim, then we'll be able to really recite a Bracha Achrona on the Peros the way it's meant to be recited, namely, on the full-fledged, genuine, wonderful Tam of the Peros. So this is a fantastic idea about the relationship of Chanukah to the Mizbeach, meaning that if the Gemara in Avodah Zarah establishes that the Chashmonoim replaced the previous Mizbeach with a second Mizbeach, they were not able to restore the original Mizbeach. But at that point, they were able for the next 200 years to set up the mitzvah of Bikurim, and in so doing, that Mizbeach would bring about the Tam of the Peros, the true Tam and the Reach of the Peros, and of course, the true, genuine fulfillment of the Bracha Achrona for the Tam of Peros that are Nishar Tam Befeh. The Chasam Sofer tries to defend the Ran, Because again, everything that we've been discussing here in Hakafah Beta this year is about the name Chanukah according to the Marsha, who says that the name Chanukah is related to the Mizbeach, but according to the Ran, it's related to Chanukah Hei. And, you know, the Marsha's objection is that, wait a minute, there was no establishment of a Yontif on Chanukah, so how can you say it's Chanukah Hei? So the Chasam Sofer wants to defend the Ran and say the Ran is not referring to Chanu as a yontif, but rather the word Chanu here refers to the cessation, the completion of the battle against the Yevanim, and that battle was victorious on the 24th of Kislev. The 25th was a day in which they commemorated the Nitzachon of the Milchama. You mean that Toronto winter finally got to him?
I guess so.
Because last week, for the first time, I heard a little bit of a complaint in his voice. I don't know. Was it minus 15? Well, what's minus 15? I mean, in Montreal, it's probably minus 100. I don't know.
Probably.
I met someone from Ottawa the other day. He says it's colder in Ottawa than it is in Montreal. Is that possible?
Yeah.
All right, Rabosai, we'll take a pause here, and I want to wish everyone, you know, the end of Chanukah and beyond Chanukah. We should be zochet to the rebuilding of the bayis and the restoration of the Mizbeach. And, you know, the Israelis use the word a chupar. I think it's an Arabic word. It means an extra gift that you get. So we'll get the extra gift of the tam of the peros and the reach of the peros. Chasam Sofer explains that the intention of the Ran in calling it Chanu Chafei is that Chanu Mimilchama Bioso Ayom. The Marshahi says, however, understood that the name of Chanukah is because of Chanchu Beis HaMikdash VaMizbeach Sheshuktzu Anshei Yovan. And we see this in the Medrash Rabbah that the day of Chafei is also the day in which Melechas HaMishkan was completed. However, Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded not to complete the Chanukah HaMishkan until Rosh Chodesh Nisan, during the month in which the Avos were born, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu nevertheless saved that day, Chafei Kislev, for the Chanukas HaChashmonoim. But he says, at what point did they actually begin HaKrovas HaKorbanos and HaKtora on the Mizbeach? The Gemara says in Masechet Menachos that Ein Mechanchim Mizbeach HaOla Ki Im B'Shachrus, who was Be'ach HaKtores Bein Harbayim, V'yoz Madlikim HaNeros. And that's how the Rambam paskins in Tamina Masof Per Gimel. Im Kein Emasai Chonchu HaMizbe'ach HaMenorah. Ibi Yom Chav Dalet B'Kislev, Im Kein Hayolonu LaHaskil Yimei Chanukah Yom Chav Dalet. Because the Chinuch was on Chav Dalet. V'i Hiskilu B'Yom Chav Hei, Im Kein Lo Edliku Neros Ad Lel Hapone L'Chavav. Because again, we established that the Mizbach HaOla is the Chinuch is Shachris and the Ketores Ben Arbaim, and then they would have to light the candles. So this is at the very end of Chaf Hei. Unehi diyom haChinuch yeshon lahaskel biyom Chaf Hei. Mikomakom ein lahaskel b'mitzvus haneres ad yom Chavav. In other words, if the Hadlokah took place on the 26th, that should be the day for Hadlokah Saneres. We could celebrate the Chinuch on the 25th, that was the Yom HaChinuch, but the Yom HaDlaka would be the 26th. And the Shevet HaLevi writes, La'niyaz Daiti, Lo B'Yom Chavdal V'Yom Chavhei Chinuch HaMizbeach. It would take a long time until they would do the Chinuch HaMizbeach. Ad Shei Yecholes L'Chanuch HaYidei Tomin Shel Shachar Do Yom Chavhei HaYirak Yom Nitzachon Min HaMilchama. So the Chafei of Kislev coincides with the victory in the battle. And that's how the Rambam has it at the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah. The Gemara tells us, as we saw in Avodah Zarah and Beis, that the Chashmonai hid the Avnei HaMizbeach, Sheshiktu Anshei Yavon. Now they have to build a new Mizbeach. How is it possible on the very day they entered into the Heichal, they were already being makriv the Tamid Shel Shachar on the new Mizbeach? It's going to take a while to build a Mizbeach. And he says that he found in the Aris HaRuah Hilchos Chanukah, Hodanas and Nes, Shayadolik Shmoni Yomim, Pirush Mori, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yitzchak, Mishum Shayu Trudim, Kol Zayin Yomim, Bibinyan Mizbeach. For 7 days they were occupied, preoccupied with building a Mizbeach, and all the clay shards that you need for the Mizbeach. Is Lama Nagu Lahadlik Shmona, El Shesosru Mizbeach Ubanuhu. In other words, that the first day it was impossible to establish a Mizbeach. They were able to establish the menorah. That's not a big deal. But as far as getting Shemen Tor, they needed a nest of Shmoni Yomim, Kadeshiyu Kevon Shahayu Trudim. They were so Torud, Bibinyan HaMizbeach, they needed a time after the period of the tirda of building the Beisan, building the Mizbeach, to dedicate themselves to Shemen and replace the Shemen with Shemen Tar. But since the Binyan of Mizbeach took a full 8 days, is therefore the possibility of getting Shemen Tar had to be delayed because of the preoccupation with building the Beisan Migdash, and therefore they needed the Ness of Shmonas Yom, of the Nair being Nidlak for Shmonas Yom. There's a lot more here, but we ran out of time, so we'll stop here. And Amir Tzashem, want to wish everyone whatever's left of Chanukah, these last few hours that are ebbing away, a Chanukah Sameh.